Happy Friday, everyone. Once again, Kristen Rodriguez here with the Health Plan Alliance, and very happy to welcome everyone back to the next round of our Risk Adjustment Roundtable discussion sessions. As you all know, we do these on the last Friday of every month, and it's an hour set aside to allow all of our risk adjustment peer group members to come together and talk through stuff that you're working on. We don't have a set agenda for the day, and we don't have a tapped presenter for today, so it truly is just an open discussion. I did myself come prepared with a few little nuggets that I can toss out there for the group if we get a little bit of dead air, but those are really just in my back pocket in case we need them. This time is really your time, and it's your chance to leverage the knowledge base of a really great group of professionals operating in markets across the United States. We have veterans here who've been doing risk adjustment, who have been coders and have been managing coders for a number of years. We have a great deal of financial acumen on the line, as well as actuarials, and a number of other great skill sets. So hope that you all have the opportunity to take advantage of that. For those of you who are on the audio only, you're not missing anything. There is nothing presented on the visual screen except today's phone number, so don't worry. For those of you who are on the visual, if you like to use the chat box, I have that open and I'm watching it, so you're welcome to chat stuff. But I really encourage you just to use the audio line. It's a roundtable discussion, right? So just clear your throat, get in there, and let's engage. So with that, then the only other reminder I have for the group is that one little pesky housekeeping item. We are not muting anyone's line today, so that means that you have to self-manage. So you can use that mute button there on your phone. And please, please, please do not put this call on hold. If you do that, your hold music or hold message will interrupt the call, and I will either need to disconnect your line if I can't, or I'll need to mute it manually, and then that'll impede your ability to engage. So those are all the housekeeping do's and don'ts. I see that we've crossed the threshold into 21 participants on the line today, which is fantastic on a Friday eve of a three-day weekend. So let me open up the floor and ask if anybody's coming to today's call with a particular question or topic in mind. Did anybody jot down a little juicy thing that they want to put out for the group today and get some responses?
Hi, this is Tara.
Hello there.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. How are you? Do you have some burning topic for us today?
Yes, I had a question. During the ACA meeting for RegTap, they had a slide that came up that showed that we should be careful when using meat or tamper, and I think I sent that in to you guys as well. And I was just wondering, were there any updates since then, or do you know about that, or what we can do about that? They said to follow ICD-10 coding guidelines instead of meat or tamper. So it was kind of an interesting thing, which was unusual.
This is Rebecca at Providence Health Plan. We were thinking the exact same question: is what does that mean?
Yeah,
if we can't,
exactly.
Tamper. What can we get some more clarity here? Because that's pretty darn vague.
Exactly. I even wrote them afterwards. I was like, can you please discuss this a little further on the next meeting? And I haven't heard anything since. But I wasn't sure if I missed it because I came in late a couple of times.
I have not heard anything new either, and it's interesting because we're in the middle of the IDA audit now for for that line of business, and you know, looking at their coding guidelines on how they're going to audit us, which is a fair question. But once again, every one of us have different guidelines that we follow, and if we can't even use meat or tamper as the starting point, where does that leave us?
Exactly.
So this is Jason. I'm going to put a plug in here because we actually discussed this on the coding forum, our most recent coding forum. And so if any health plans are on the line that have coders that haven't registered for that, I very much encourage you to register for that. I believe, and as we discussed on that coding forum, They, I think, really confused a lot of people when they brought up those slides. Kind of the consensus from that group is we're still going to follow our coding guidelines when it comes to meat and tamper. I don't think that really changes. They confused people when they said follow the ICD-10 coding guidelines. Well, that really doesn't give you a whole lot to go off of from what we decided. So from our perspective and from the consensus on the coding forum is we're going to continue to follow our coding guidelines when it comes to meat and tamper.
Okay, thank you for your thoughts on that. I appreciate it. I just am concerned because when it comes from the source like that, I mean, you know, what do you do?
I think, and this is Deb with Paramount, and I would agree with Jason, but I also think we're in the middle of a national RADV and also starting our ACA, excuse me, I didn't think you literally meant to clear your throat, but hang on. And we're also, you know, getting ready to kicking off our IVA as well. And we were shocked at a couple of the codes that they accepted. And so in looking back at the ICD, you know, the guidelines that they state, basically if a doctor mentions the DIAG, that's pretty much following the guidelines. And we're kind of, I think what we found in reviewing some of what CMS accepted in this national RADV review is that they're a little bit more liberal than what we are sometimes. So I think that they basically kept reiterating, follow the guidelines. So I think if we follow the guidelines, stick with our pretty much meat and tamper, I think you're going to be safe.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks for everybody's input on that. I appreciate
it. Excuse me, this is Jason. I would also suggest work with your IVA and see what their guidelines are, what they're going to use, as we have to contract with one. I think they should be in partnership with us, you know, with each of the issuers. So it's probably good to reach out to your IVA, too, and get their guidelines of how they're going to treat it.
Okay, yeah, that's a great idea. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, you know, it just occurred to me, this is Kristen again with the Alliance. I should probably ask the question, is there anyone on the line that this is your first time joining us for one of these roundtables?
Yes, this is my first time.
And you kicked us off. Oh, my gosh, fearless. If I had a sticker or like a chop key, I would throw it at you right now. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Eliana Owens with Mission Health System. This is also my first call.
Welcome, Eliana. And Mission Health, you guys are going to be entering into MA, is that right, in Medicaid?
Yes. We have a whole 80 covered lives this year.
Woohoo!
No. 80, that is.
Your audits are going to go really fast.
I hope. I'm learning a lot, so I hope to learn a lot from everybody on the call.
That's great. Any other first-timers today?
Yes, this is Angela Morningstar with Community Care Health Plans in Oklahoma.
I was just out there with y'all on Monday. Wonderful, Angela. I'm really glad that you're here.
Hello there. This is Mustafa and Carrie from Molina Healthcare, New Mexico. It's our first time as well.
Right on. Welcome. Great. Any other people for the first time today?
This is Rudy Dominguez with Community Health Plan of Washington.
I love it. I love that you guys are pulling in some new team members from the CHPW group. That's fantastic.
And Danielle Brinkley from CHPW as well.
Two new folks. Very cool. Right on. Okay, great.
Awesome. This is Alan from CCHP. This is probably like the second call. I usually don't speak up.
Hi, Alan. Alan and I have been talking quite a bit lately, and so Alan's from Chinese Community Health Plan, CCHP, there in San Francisco, and this actually gives me an opportunity just to point everyone on the line to a resource that I just posted today, actually. Alan gave a recent presentation at a RISE conference, a few days ago, and he was kind enough to share it with me and gave me permission to post it out for the members. So I actually posted that in our coding work group portal, and I also posted it on the event calendar attached to today's roundtable. And that was one of the items I had kind of put in my back pocket that if folks are interested, I noted that we have a few threads on the discussion forum around risk adjustment that talk about building up departments. I don't know if Dean is with us on the line, but I know that he had been engaging in some conversations with folks around, you know, different consultants that folks are using to help them build out their risk adjustment department and different org charts that folks are deploying in order to make sure that the departments, the way the department's sitting in the organization makes sense. And so Alan actually covered, you know, quite a bit of this in CCHP's journey along these same decisions in his presentation. So that PowerPoint deck is available for everybody attached to today's event. If you're having trouble finding that link, you know, feel free to reach out to me, and I'm happy to just forward it on to you. But it is posted in those two places, our coding work group portal and today's event on the calendar. And Alan, I don't know if you have any high-level comments about that presentation, things that, you know, the overall theme or things that you guys have learned along the way as you're going through this journey there at Chinese Community.
Yeah, sure. So just to give everybody background, Chinese Community Health Plan is a very small local plan, essentially covering 1.5 counties right in the Northern California area. We have commercial, exchange, and Medicare lives. So we're really managing risk adjustment in two models. I think up until the responsibilities of the risk adjustment was passed over to me about a year ago, we didn't have a full-time staff managing risk adjustment. It essentially was kind of an afterthought and overlooked from our executive team and the board. So in the last year, we really had to work with quite a limited budget since we didn't have a track record of positive ROI that we could leverage. We had to start small. So our team really started with essentially three people, started with a CDI, who also is a coder, myself, and essentially a risk adjustment coordinator to manage the day-to-day. So being that there was a very small staff, small investment, resource investment, we leveraged Health Fidelity to utilize their NLP and analytics in order to be more strategic. And so looking into the slides, you'll see how it's broken down, but we focused on both a retrospective effort as well as a prospective effort in order to essentially lift our team up from bare bones to what I would consider a fairly solid operation now.
Do you mind? This is
awesome. Thanks again for sharing the resource, Alan. We always really appreciate that when members are sharing different things with one another. So really, really appreciate that you sent that over my way. Any questions for Alan or other people using that same vendor? I know there's a few folks that are using natural language processing in their efforts. I think Providence, you guys are standing one up as well, right?
We are. We've been using it for just about over a year now.
Yeah. So Rebecca was actually the one that provided the reference for us when we were looking for a tool to stand it up. So thank you again, Rebecca, for providing that reference.
This is Eliana. We have been looking at the Talix product. Does anyone have familiarity with that vendor?
This is Rebecca again. So I work at the health plan, but our health system, which is Providence Health and Services, has been looking at Talix. It's an impressive product that we've seen. My only caution on Talix is that they're fairly new and they haven't been able to integrate yet with Epic. That doesn't mean it won't happen. And that because they're so new, I worry about some of the bugs, but you know, their storyboard and what they're coming out with looks really good. I like what they're doing. If it works as they've shown, it looks like a great product, and our system is looking at it from a perspective rather than a retrospective spot.
Okay, great. Yeah, we are also looking at using it both prospectively and retrospectively. I think we may be a little bit unique in that our CDI program began as the health system CDI program and then have expanded to support our MA plan. So hence the reason why I have a lot of learning to do as, you know, to understand what are our obligations as a health, as a plan.
Hi, this is Stephanie from Health New England.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Health New England.
I was just going to say that we actually just started using Health Fidelity this month.
Oh, wow. How's that going?
It's going all right. It's going all right. Working through some bugs, but seems to be going pretty good.
Could I, this is Rudy from CHPW. Can I ask, we're doing a vendor evaluation right now for chart coding, and we're looking at Episource and E4E. If anybody on the call has used those vendors and has any feedback for us, I would appreciate it.
Is anyone using, if not those two vendors, then any other vendor that they might put out there for Community Health Fund of Washington to consider?
Yeah, Kristen, this is Jason. So we actually have a contract that we did a pilot with them, and then we just started our first project with them with Apixio. Now, Apixio only has an MA model right now. They're working on their commercial model, but our pilot was quite impressive with them. We did look at Health Fidelity also, but we decided to go with Apixio.
Got it. Thanks, Jason. I'm writing that name down. And for CHPW, I didn't catch the second vendor that you noted that you guys are looking for. What was the name of that one?
That was Episource and E4E.
Got it. Okay, thanks.
You want me to repeat it?
Oh, no. I got it. Thank you.
And just one side note, you know, if we don't have any feedback for you today on today's call, I would definitely encourage you guys to – you could post that question on the discussion forum because folks who aren't on the call today may have some input for you. So that would just be my little suggestion for homework for you on a three-day weekend.
Thank you.
I give you homework and you thank me. You see that, Deb? You see how he thanked me for giving him work to do? That's awesome. I teased Deb Curry. All right.
I'm sorry. I was on mute.
You were on mute, huh?
Deb's already started the three-day weekend.
Right.
Yeah, but sometimes I think you like it when I'm on mute.
No.
Hey, Kristen, can I bring up a question?
Absolutely, Jason.
So we've had some internal discussions and with our partnership on our delivery side with the appropriate code to use for what's considered an in-home assessment. I would be interested to know, anyone on the line, if you are using, you know, if you're doing in-home assessments either internally with your own group or with vendors, if you're willing to share what codes they are using for those in-home assessments. I'll tell you, ours wants to use the annual wellness visit code. So the G0438 or 439. We have used a vendor previously who did not use those codes but used more of an in-home visit code, but we're having some pushback from our compliance people of continuing to use that code. So if anyone's willing to share if they are using the G code or if you're using a different code and the reasons why, that I would like to get that input.
Jason?
Yes.
This is Deb.
Yes.
And here's my thoughts on that. If you're using the G code, which is probably the gray area in compliance, the provider should be using 12 for the place of service code. Because if they really want to use that G-code for the annual wellness visit code, which is quasi-gray incorrect, because is that really what they're doing when they're doing a home assessment?
Right.
So it's really getting to the bottom of what they're doing, because when you're doing an annual wellness, you're really looking at them, and it's like an actual visit with a PCP, and you're going over everything. So if
correct.
You have a form that you're asking these doctors to complete, and it's not just one of those home assessments, then okay, but then you probably have to do some strict auditing of what your vendor is doing. And if they're accurately billing it with the G code and the place of service is 12, then okay. But realistically, there are E&M codes, which is 99342 or 99343.
How about a 99341?
Well, yeah, it's the 99341 to 99350. It's that group. It's based on are they established or are they a new patient and how much time they spend with them. So the 41 is 20 minutes, the 42 is 30 minutes, the 43 is 45 minutes, you know, and so forth and so on, you know, 60 minutes. So it's depending on the time and if they're an established patient. So if you have where they've done this numerous years for you and they potentially might see the patient again, then and it's the same doctor, then it's going to be an established patient. So there are those home visit codes that they would need to use, which is
yeah.
what we highly recommend with our home vendors, because a home visit and an assessment is different than doing an annual wellness visit.
Correct. Yeah, thank you, Deb. That's good info. Yeah, mostly what we are focusing on are our members who have not had PCP visits. So we don't have claims for them. So basically they're new. And so because they're new, we want to be able to go out and visit them because we don't know if they're homebound or why they can't go to see an actual PCP. And so that was my reason of not to use the G code. And to use a 9934 code because it's an in-home visit. It's an in-home assessment.
Right.
And this is Lori from Network Health. And to use an annual wellness visit, there's requirements around billing that of what needs to come out of that visit, which most
right.
vendors don't do.
Yes.
I would not use them. I mean, we use the home visit codes of 99432, 99342, 343. We use those ones as well.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you. You're helping my case, by the way.
Hey, Jason, this is Kristen. Can I give you some homework on this?
Sure.
will you please do me a favor? I really was taking notes, but you guys know I'm not a certified coder, and so I only follow 30% of those conversations. Can you just write down what you guys just said and just send it to me? Because then I'll put that up for other people that weren't on the call, please.
Yeah, can I ask, so I'm not a certified coder either, so I don't know if I'm qualified to do that. But Deb,
Oh my God.
Jason. Jason, I would be happy to help my brother-in-arms, Jason, out and put that in the
right. Did you like that? Well, technically I'm not. I am not a certified coder.
Deb, I appreciate you so much. So I think that was a great exchange, and I was really trying to follow it, but I know, you know, it's just here on this recording, right? It's going to get lost if we don't
yes.
write it down.
Hey,
yes, I would be more than happy to do that for Jason.
I have an additional
Jason, do you want to just have Deb come do your meeting for you, and then she can just do that for you, too?
Maybe. We'll see if that's in the budget. Hey, I do have an additional. Deb, can you send me those codes and also the times that you mentioned? That's very helpful. I'm not familiar with that. So that would be
You know what? I'll take it even a step further for you, Jason. I'll copy it right out of my CPT code book for you, which goes into greater detail.
Sweet. I have those books, but they're only on my desk for show. I don't think I've ever opened them.
Oh, my gosh. Mine get old and beat up by the end of the year.
Oh, my word. All right.
You just made
my goodness. All right. Other topics from folks on the line. As you can tell, this is a great group. Lots of great knowledge and resources available here to you, so definitely feel free.
Does anybody sit on those RAPS and EDS user group phone calls?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did anybody like how CMS just kind of threw out there with kind of no fanfare or really no explanation or ability for us to appeal that they're changing our retro risk payment from July to October?
Oh, yes, yeah. We enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, imagine having to tell your VP of finance about that one.
Yeah, they weren't real happy with that over here either.
And then I was like, I kind of missed the memo, and I was like, wait a minute, no, that's just the reruns. We're still getting our RAPS payment. And then when they said it the second time, I was like, oh, maybe I need to go read back and reread that because I had missed the April call. So one of our other team members who was on the April call said, no, Deb, I'm pretty sure they said both. And so we
Nothing's
both went
coming.
Back and looked at it. And it's true.
Yep. That's what I got. Yep.
This is
so
Karen.
We're all in agreement. We're not getting anything from them for the retro final payment for 2016 until October.
Yep.
Yeah. This is Karen Rosen. This is Karen Rosen from Providence Health Plan. They also stated that 2016 payment that we're going to get in October isn't final. They're going to do a second rerun of 2016. And they're also going to do a third rerun of 2015.
Right. Because you can still submit EDS data yet. They haven't closed EDS data
right.
yet.
Right, they haven't actually closed it, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't give a deadline for that. That's what we were
Not
trying
yet.
To. When's the deadline?
Nope. They'll give you a deadline after they close it.
That's exactly how that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we can still submit 2015 and older EDS data or only 2015? Because we were waiting on clarification for that, too.
EDS data, I think you're just supposed to continually submit. I mean, even after it closes, you can still submit 2015, 2014 if you actually pay a claim from those dates of service in the current time period. It just won't impact the risk adjustment settlement after the deadline.
But the 2015 data will affect
the
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the 2015, they didn't give a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Right, 2015 still will. 2014 for 2015 payment will not.
Right.
But they don't have a hard deadline like they did on RAPS where they say don't submit dates of service after this date on the EDS side.
No, they still want all your data.
Yeah, they still want you to submit. They just cut off for risk adjustment calculation.
Hi, this is Danielle from CHPW. I think I missed that one. I thought there was a May 1st deadline for EDS for the 2015 calendar year.
There was initially a May 1st. That was the original deadline, but then they stated that they would still continue to accept data for this rerun, this second rerun.
Oh, I totally missed that one. That is good to know. Thank you.
So can I just get clarification? Are they not doing a July true-up payment then? Do I understand that right? Or are they doing one in July, but they'll also do another one in October?
Nope,
no,
not in July.
Not in July at all, Jason.
So there's no July payment.
Nope. The mid-year adjustment should still come through. That's for the 2017 payment year. I believe that comes through in the
August.
Right, but for I think we're talking about 2015, the dates of service for the final
correct.
Is not going to be until October.
That's correct.
And here's the thing. We're always shocked when CMS changes things, but they do it all the time that we should just learn and know that that's what's going to happen.
That's what I tell my leadership. Historically, for the past 3 years, it's been this, but you never know.
Well, because they changed they moved up the September sweep date by a week, you know, in the letter that they sent out a few weeks ago or a month ago.
And I think it'd be reasonable to expect it on October 31st.
I'm sorry. I was supposed to be on mute.
Hey, this is Jason. Can I ask another question? I'm interested on those that have commercial exchange programs, plans. If you were, so what we get from Utah and Idaho from our Department of Insurance is they actually will give us an estimate based on the edge data that we have to send them of what our transfer payment will be. The estimate, and it's been pretty accurate based on the last 2 years of what actual CMS publishes. I'm curious if other health plans on the line, if you get that same thing from your Department of Insurance, and if you do, what were your thoughts on your transfer payment, higher, lower, what you expected? Any thoughts on that?
I don't think we get that in Ohio, because we didn't. But I'll have to ask Jason, because I don't recall seeing anything like that.
In California, sorry, this is Alan. In California, we don't either, aside from the CMS-released interim report.
Okay.
In Oregon, most health plans, this is Karen Rosen again at Providence. In Oregon, most of the carriers, I think it might be 100% of the carriers in Oregon, are participating with Wakely in what they call their WinWAR project.
Yeah.
And so we do get information from that. However, we had a significant additional payable between what Wakely estimated in December compared to what they calculated based on the RATE files, and that was basically because one carrier in Oregon that represented about 25% of the market had a significant increase in their risk scores based on their supplemental files that they sent in. So, you know, we're trying to decide how much benefit it really is to us to participate in that project if carriers aren't fair about how they submit their data.
Yeah. I'm just curious, on that supplemental file, do you think that they were all adds? Or do you think they also sent in deletes?
It's hard to know, but was somebody going to say something? Yeah, it's hard to know. I don't know if they were sending ads or deletes, but we just know that Wakely used a 5% completion factor for their December calculation because they said that that's what they'd seen historically for the past 2 years and across the nation. But there was the one carrier that went up double digits.
Well, what month did they release their summary report, Wakely, I mean?
Well, Wakely does a report, I think, 4 times a year, and I'm not sure exactly what the timing is, but the third one comes out in December, and then they do another one. They did another one based off the RATE file to compare to what they had calculated in December.
Mm.
So that just came out last month, or this month, I guess, based off the RATE file.
Hi, guys. This is Kristen with the Alliance. I just want to interject really quickly. I'm going to put a plug in. We actually have an upcoming event with Wakely to talk about their WinRAR report. It's on June 21st, and they're going to be using Sentara's data. Dean volunteered to let them use his data to do a show and tell. So it's literally like a walking tour of the WinRAR report and different ways you can leverage the data and use it. So just wanted to mention that. It's on the calendar for folks, so you can go out and register for it.
And I think, I don't know who was talking about the Wakely thing, but I think you bring up a good point is I think a lot of plans, and we were in this same boat, we sent our supplemental file right at the end of the year. You know, right before the April 30th deadline. And so if it's stuff that they're, you know, as they're giving these estimates, if that's not in there, yeah, I can see how it can come as a shock when the final comes out. But at that point, there's nothing more you can do to change that. So, we have not been involved with the Wakely. We have our own actuary department that does our own data analysis on that.
Yeah, we do the same thing. Our list, we sent in our supplemental file at the very end, And our list was very, very close to the 5% completion factor that Wakely used. So we felt like we were in the ballpark, but like I said, the other carrier had a double-digit lift. So I don't know how they managed that, but because we worked really, really hard to get that 5%.
Yeah.
This was our first year to participate in Wakely, and we actually didn't sign up until, November. So we were in at the very end. And, yes, it appears to only work if everyone is somewhat consistent in their production of data. But I think it's still better than the nothing you get otherwise, because we do calculate all of our numbers internally, but that gives us no insight into how other carriers, what their numbers are looking like, which is absolutely necessary for the calculation.
Yeah, what I mentioned about the Department of Insurance data that we get that three times a year throughout the year. So that kind of gives us a good estimate of where we're at.
Yeah, we don't have anything like that.
Okay. I had another question.
The other caveat with the Wakely, though, is if 100% of your market or very close to 100% of your market doesn't participate, you're still limited. And so that's where we were, I believe, not this year but the year before, not everyone was participating. And so, we had a huge variance between what they were able to project because they didn't have all the data.
Why we joined so late, because up until that point, in our state, there's some carriers with a small amount of the business, but there's two with most of the business and one with actually the majority of that. And that player was not in Wakely until 2016. That's why we never participated. So it was kind of, once they were in, there was a point in us being in, but without them, there was no point.
And does Wakely give you that information to let you know how much of your market, of the different carriers in your market, are participating in that?
I don't know that they gave it to us or not. We just know, because our market's fairly small, who the players are and where most of the business is sitting.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the thing here. I think we just know.
What's the administrative burden in terms of giving them the data that they need to run the summary results? Is it just giving them Edge response files or?
No. It's a separate file. It's basically a second submission. It was not particularly cumbersome. We actually, because we came in so late, had, I think, 2 weeks to get the submissions in, and we managed to do it.
Yeah. Hey, Kristen, I had another question. I love this round table.
Go ahead.
Hey, also for those on the ACA, commercial is on my mind just because everything ended and we're waiting for the final results. I'm curious of those that if you've been in it for a couple of years, even if you started back in 2014, has your acceptance rate of your Edge data, even if you've done it internally or through a vendor, has your acceptance rate increased over those 3 years? Or are most of you already had a high acceptance rate, so you've just sustained that? Or have you seen increases in your acceptance rates over the 3 years?
Hi, Jason. This is Deb. Ours has sustained pretty much the same, and we've done our own. So been a extremely – we have a great Edge team, and we've worked diligently. Make sure we've met the threshold, so we've had a pretty high rate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has anyone had a change in their acceptance rate positively?
This is Danielle from CHPW. We've definitely had an improvement in our acceptance rate, but I think it's more of just learning lessons throughout the years of how to get claims to accept in the Edge server, and people really sitting down and figuring out how to, I guess, how to not just try to shove it all in at the end, but but kind of plan out the year. So we've done better. We've also, our market has shrunk, so that's helped as well. We haven't had as much volume. And then for supplemental data, I think we've always had a really high acceptance rate on that end.
And do you use a vendor or do it internally?
We have a TPA who does it.
Okay.
But we work really closely with them because we're their only client.
Oh, okay.
This is Alan. Has anybody, so I think I only recently became aware that there's a test environment that you can submit to that will give you error response files. So I think that that's available starting around July or so. Does anybody currently package in submissions for even like the first half of the year to run them through, work through the errors? To align it so that when they actually push those encounters through the production environment, that essentially you're expecting a zero rejection rate?
We actually run every file through test before we run it through production.
We do the same thing.
So do we.
We do the same thing. We do the same thing.
This is Deb with Paramount. We don't run every file through production, but we do test when they open up the test. Before we run production. So once we know we've got the file working and we've worked the kinks out, then from there the rest of the year we don't put the rest of the files through test.
Okay. So that's our current process right now too.
What, Jason, you didn't have any more questions?
Well, I was allowing anyone else to ask questions.
No, and I appreciate that. In all seriousness, though, are there any other questions on the line? Folks waiting patiently to voice any items you'd like to bring to the group?
I have one, and I kind of put it out there on one of the threads earlier this week. In reading through the Department of Justice lawsuit against United, several things kind of struck me. While we have no issue with knowingly not submitting deletions, we may not have been putting as much energy into finding them as perhaps will be expected going forward. And so I'm wondering what kind of resources and processes people are putting into that. And let me tell you, we actually, and totally by coincidence, a year ago, we were doing so well with our risk adjustment program that our score jumped considerably, and we became concerned that perhaps there was some overcoding going on at the providers. And so we worked with our vendor to do a comparison of they blind code, so they're blind coding to claims, and then ran a report of the discrepancies. Unfortunately, what we got was too high to just automatically delete everything. We pulled some samples. And what we're finding is there's usually an explanation. Either our vendor was more it tends to be more conservative than maybe they have to be, or they didn't have that date of service in the chart for some reason. It didn't come across, things like that. So while we're not finding a lot of issues, we're concerned that maybe we need a more standardized process. And in talking to our vendor, we're the only ones who've ever requested they do this. This was brand new for them, too. So I'm kind of wondering what other plans are doing or if they've got something in place to look for potential deletions and how much energy they're putting into that.
So this is back to your thread because I didn't fully understand the question, but now I think I understand better. So when you say look for deletions, are you looking for the vendors you use or the physicians who bill on the claims?
The physicians who bill on the claim. So it's
okay.
Right. We have put a lot. We've been very successful in working with our owner providers anyway, in having them in having a more robust coding program and having doctors pay more attention to picking the best code, but the increase in a short period of time was so significant that we just got concerned that maybe people had gotten overzealous.
Okay, so you're
but
talking,
so far we've
so
not
do you
found
target,
that.
Do you do target lists? Like, so are your coders
yes.
inpatient or do you inpatient? I'm sorry, in-house or do you outsource that?
We outsource that. So
okay.
Yeah, it's totally outsourced. We do target lists. That's actually a project that's built between us and the vendor. So we do provide those.
See, and I think that is where you're going to capture it, because this is something that I've asked our analysts, because we have analysts that are in-house. We also have analytic vendors, but we have a coding team that's in-house, and I don't want, like, we have target lists to capture codes that are what they call we should have, but haven't been reported. But I also
right.
want to have the opposite. I want to have like a risk mitigation list, a list of codes where, hey, these were reported, but, ooh, gee, maybe you should look at them because they might be high risk for shouldn't have been reported codes. You know, like those your stroke codes that were reported with office locations of 11, you know, where you're in the office and you had a acute MI. So, you know, there's a list of codes, and I did this a few years ago where you have a list of like active cancer codes where you're the only one to report it in 5 years. Where
right.
It probably should have been a history of cancer versus an active cancer. So there's like a list of different DIAGs that you can get that would really like be those red flag codes to look for in the absence of all other codes, if it's only once in a year or once in 2 or 3 years.
Right. And we have in past years, we've done both the stroke and the history of cancer versus active cancer and looked at that. The problem is literally my risk adjustment area is a supervisor who also handles edge server encounter data and ad hoc reporting and a part-time analyst and me and no coders. So I'm trying to figure out what I need in the area, and then we use an outside vendor for all the coding. But we're asking them now to do things that are currently built into their processes, so it's causing a little bit of they're not pushing back. I just don't know that they have the resources to do it. So I'm trying to figure out what resources I need to ask for and where I need to put them.
Right.
I've almost come to the conclusion I need at least one in-house coder to do audits.
You do.
But
yes.
That's the work. And so basically I'm trying to get confirmation that, yes, that's a path that I probably do need to be going down.
I second that motion.
How many lights are you looking at, just so I understand the context of how big
around 30,000.
Around 30,000. Yeah, you need to be auditing.
I need more than one coder.
Yeah, you're going to need more than one.
Because you need to audit your vendor.
Yes.
Right, and that's
definitely
not something that I have made attempts by reading the coding manual and looking at it, but obviously I'm not a coder and I'm not going to be able to make good arguments if I disagree with them. So, okay, that's sort of the path I've been going down and what I've been thinking.
This is Danielle from CHPW. We recently hired a coder that's going to be helping with some of this QA work for retractions, but prior to that, we didn't have that resource, and the way we kind of got around that was we would have two different coding vendors code a sample of the same charts, and then we'd compare their results side by side and then kind of make some educated guesses on what we should retract from there. So that's also an option to kind of get you started before you hire someone.
Yeah, my vendor, because they tend to be more conservative, I don't have a lot of concerns about them overcoding anything. But because mm-hmm. they're blind coding, they don't see things they need to be deleting.
What do you mean by blind coding?
They basically don't look at the claim at all. They just
yeah,
take the chart and code it.
Yep.
Right. Most vendors don't.
Gotcha.
So they're not deleting
it. So they don't know what's there to delete it unless they run an analysis and all that. And what that gives me is a list of things that somebody then needs to go through and look at again, which I don't have the resources for.
Because we do internal blind coding, but the idea is if they didn't code it and it's on the claim, then that's our first thought to think, well, then that probably should be deleted.
That's the path we've been going down. It's just once I get there and I have this long list, what do I do with that?
Yeah, my concern, what you mentioned from a risk standpoint, and again, we have no idea how they select for RADV, but if your risk scores are dramatically changing from year to year, CMS will also note that.
Yes, we have a lot of concern about that, too. Our risk score was actually fairly low for years and years and years, and so we weren't very concerned about getting chosen or there being an issue. But because we've had a significant increase probably over the last 3 years, we fully anticipate getting selected for a RADV in the next year or so.
Yeah, so one idea to maybe look at is because if you don't, you know, to simplify, if you don't have the coding team, and it's what we started to do here at Select Health, is we looked for single occurrences. So from a RADV, you know, you can send up to 5 records for the condition for the member. But if you only have one encounter, one date of service, that whole entire year for that condition, you'll want to make sure that you've got the documentation to support that condition. So that's our first priority that we look at, are any members that have just a single HCC occurrence in the whole entire year. And our vendor actually runs us a report to give us that information. And that's what my coding team first focuses on from an audit standpoint.
Okay, then that makes sense. And
that's
in talking about it with my vendor, that's one thing we've looked about doing. The problem is just resources to get it done.
From CHPW. So, you know, right now we're doing a coding vendor review and talking to different coding vendors. And has anybody worked with a vendor that you can send claims data to? So when they're doing your coding, they can tie it to a claim and then flag it
if it's not substantiated. This is Kristen Alliance. Oh, no, go ahead. Does somebody have an answer there?
No, my thought was that I don't know that any vendors are doing that, but that's probably something that going forward they should be starting getting pressure to do from their clients.
The way we do things at Providence Health Plan is for our external coders, we run a patient list for the clinic that they're going to go visit, and then we look at the past year and the current year codes that have been coded. And so for each member, we list out what codes were coded in the last year and what codes were coded to date this year, and flag the ones that haven't been recoded if they're chronic. And then we also flag the cancer and acute stroke codes that we've deleted, so that if we've over-deleted, they can add them back. And we're also flagging and Rebecca could probably speak to this better, but peripheral artery disease that has been coded by podiatrists only to validate HCC 108, vascular disease. And so when we provide that to our external coders, they don't know what claims those codes have been coded on, but they can look through the chart and say, this member has been coded for all of these conditions. What do I see in the chart? And they can delete things. Or suggest delete things. If they suggest deletions, we go back and look to see if the code's been added by several other providers, not just that one. And if they have, then we don't delete them.
Okay.
Rebecca, did I capture that correctly?
That lovely. That's exactly what we do. But we also delete additional codes. So we have the 3, the stroke, cancer, and the peripheral vascular disease. But then we also, why we're there, if we see something else that's just not supported, we see that it was coded in, you know, in the previous year, then we'll do further research and we delete things beyond just those three. So we do a lot of deletions, but it's very manual. It's, you know, I have a whole coding team. We have about, last year we looked at about 90,000 lives. So we put a lot of work into it, but the deletion redaction process has always been historically painful. Because you can delete something and find out it was supported elsewhere by another provider in their record, and if you don't have access to that other record, you don't want to delete it until you verify that it really wasn't valid. So there's a lot of, you know, the ideal situation is if you've got everything right in front of you for the year and you don't have to go around hunting for additional medical records. Without that, you do the best you can.
Hi, this is Tara from CCHP. Just a question off of that other answer. Just curious, why are you deleting the PVD?
So we were part of the national sample for the RADV, and one of the codes that came back that we couldn't validate was a PVD code reported by a podiatrist. doing our own research internally, we have found that often that code is overreported by podiatrists because they use it to make sure they get paid for nail trimmings or some kind of service that they are doing.
Oh, okay.
And okay. So we found historically that it does cause problems. And when it was identified on a target on a national audit, we thought, you know, let's try to clean up our data this way. So we're constantly looking at areas that we have that are, you know, put us at risk.
So just by podiatrists, though.
Yeah, just by podiatrists.
Gotcha.
But we also, since we flag it for our coders to look at, that means, you know, they can look beyond the podiatrist. But those are the ones that we flag and say, hey, this code came in just from a podiatrist. Look and make sure it really is validated by another provider.
Yeah. And this is Lori at Network Health, and we typically do use a place of service to delete strokes and acute MIs out of the office as well. So.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, thanks. I understand the strokes and the cancers, but I've never heard of the PVD, so that from podiatrists, that makes sense.
This is Deb with Paramount, and I would agree with, and I'm sorry, I missed where you were from, but we have the same issue with our podiatrist, and for the exact same reason. And ironically, they chose that code for our national RADV, but we were able to support it. So. With a podiatrist note, ironically.
Oh,
and that was
great.
One that we thought that they were really liberal with because all he said was diabetic patient presents with peripheral vascular disease and neuropathy. And we were like, that's it? That's all he said with no documentation to support it other than his statement.
Wow.
I
know,
amazing. Right?
Yeah.
Right?
All right, everybody, it's Kristen here with the Alliance, and believe it or not, time flies when you're having fun. So we're right at the end of our hour. I want to be respectful of everybody's Friday afternoon, especially on the eve of a three-day weekend. Really excited. I always love how I enter the call anxious, thinking, oh, gosh, there's going to be dead air. You know, we're not going to have anything to talk about. And, you know, every time you guys prove me wrong. So I appreciate more than I can say your engagement in the conversation and how you guys always come with great energy. And then also want to put it out there, especially for folks, this is your first time doing one of these roundtable calls. The risk adjustment group, the group that's on the phone today, and we have probably 150 other colleagues that are also very engaged. This is a fantastic group. We have this standing call. Again, it's the last Friday of every month. They're already on the calendar, so you can go ahead and register for all of those and get those on your calendar. It's okay if you don't come, right? Just get them on your calendar. And then we also have standing coding work group calls, which a lot of the same players are on those calls. But there, again, we do really focus the conversation on coding challenges and documentation challenges and policy elements. And then the last piece I'll mention is if anyone has suggestions for me, right, this is only, I think, our third roundtable, maybe it's our fourth that we've done. So if anybody has ideas on ways to improve or add on to it, you know, that's how we roll here at the Alliance. It's all driven by you. So you're welcome. If you're on the visual, when you click the box to close that, a survey will pop up. And so you could use that form if you have suggestions and want to put them in that way. If you're on the audio only and just have a great idea, feel free to email me or call me directly at your convenience. That absolutely drives what we do is the suggestions that all of you make. And then the last plug I did mention earlier, and I'll just mention it once more, that on June 21st, we do have another risk adjustment call in addition to our standing last Friday of the month. We're doing a call with Wakely to talk about WinRAR. So for those of you who are not really familiar with that report or haven't really had an opportunity to really dig through one, we're going to have Julia, the CEO and president of Wakely. She's actually going to take us on a walking tour. So I hope that you guys can join us for that. Thanks again, everybody. Have a fantastic afternoon. Talk to everybody soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.